You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me. My guest tonight is a writer, a film producer, a screenwriter, a champion-level ice skater, a highly skilled horseman, a pop star with a number one smash single to his credit, and on top of all that, he's a movie star of the first order whose co-stars have included John Wayne, Sophia Loren, Natalie Wood, Gwen Verdon, Gary Cooper, and Rita Hayworth. He's known by the name Tab Hunter, and it's an honor to say Tab Hunter. Welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I feel like a master, you know, what, a jack of all trades, master of none.
you're a master of all of them, as a matter of fact.
But you know, I have delved into quite a few things in my life, absolutely.
I read your book, Tab Hunter Confidential, The Making of a Movie Star, and I really enjoyed it. And I was fascinated, speaking of master of all trades, by the fact that you are such a highly skilled horseman, a highly skilled on ice, but not so skilled as an actor, although you eventually became a very fine one, of course, and not so skilled as a singer at the beginning, that you sort of had to learn on the job.
Well, absolutely. You know, being a product of Hollywood, I had to learn while doing, and that's much more difficult because I was just sort of thrown into the business. And as far as singing, the only singing experience I had was singing in the choir at church or singing in the shower. And as you know, everyone sounds great with the echo of the shower.
So how did it happen? I mean, when you started acting, I know you studied acting with Jeff Corey.
Jeff was fabulous. Yes, he was one of the great coaches. I did study with Jeff. He was one of the finer coaches, as well as a very, very fine actor.
Oh, yeah, and blacklisted for many years.
Yes, he was. But there were a lot of top Hollywood people that worked with Jeff Corey. I used to love to go for my session with him because I'd see people like Shelley Winters and just a lot of really fine actors working on projects with him.
Yeah. So how did he help you develop your acting skills?
Well, I think delving into yourself. You know, I think one of the key things in life is we must learn to divorce ourselves from ourselves, because that can be pretty deadly. And he would certainly help you build a character, and I really, really enjoyed doing that and loved that part of the research and the delving into, you know, building a character and having him come to life.
You said in your book that you also had to kind of work on your voice. You had to lower your voice, or how did you do that?
Well, I did before I even got in the business. I worked with a man by the name of Lester Luthor, who worked with quite a few people in Hollywood. And, you know, I was just a kid, hi there, how are you? You know, one of those things. But Henry Wilson was my agent before Dick Clayton became my agent, who was really great. And Henry had me go to Lester Luthor, and I worked with him, and he just gave you voice things. It's like when I was singing in New York, I would work with Keith Davis, who worked with all the people on Broadway, to learn where the center was and your core and to work from there.
Well, I was also intrigued in your book about the story of Dot Records, and I remember that record label, and that was the label that sort of discovered you. How did you fall in?
Well,
with
Dot was a huge label, you know, Pat Boone, Guy Bonney Guitar, so many artists were on that label. I was thrilled when I was asked by when Randy to come on in and he'd like to meet with me and see if I wanted to record. He wanted to hear me sing. And I was just thrilled about that.
And had you considered the idea of being a singer before that?
No, I'd never thought about it. You know, I used to sing in church on Sunday, and that was about it. You know, in the shower, like I said.
And there you were, at number one. Well, how did that feel?
Well, that was surprising. You know, Randy said, he called me when he said, I've got a song that I want you to hear, and I want to hear what you do with it. And I sang it for him, and he said, I like it, let's record it. We recorded it on a Friday, and Monday morning I heard it coming out of my car radio. And I almost hit a palm tree on Sunset Boulevard. I was so shocked.
Did you play a musical instrument?
When I was at St. John's Military Academy, my brother was in the band, and anything my brother did, I wanted to do. He was 11 months and 7 days older than me, and So he was in the band, so of course I had to get in the band, so I played the trombone, but I wasn't very good at it. I was just a kid.
Did you learn how to read music? I mean, can you read music?
I could read a little bit of music, but I wasn't the best at it because I never put, you know, I never focused on it that much.
So when you got to Hollywood and you got under contract, I mean, that was really kind of the end of an era, the end of a studio era. You were one of the last stars to emerge from that contract scene.
Well, the studios were falling apart. They didn't know what to do. You know, so many things were happening. The people wanted real people in real situations. The influence of those wonderful European films like the French and the Italian filmmakers contributed such a great deal. And television was coming in a big way, and studios really were losing the certain type of audiences, and they didn't know which way to go. So television was coming in. It was quite a difficult time in Hollywood. So, but I was part of the end of that studio era, and very fortunate to be a part of that.
Can you remember, you know, like the first days at Warner Brothers? What was that like?
Well, I was a wide-eyed kid that came in, and it was just, you know, the first thing that I was sent out there for an interview for a film called Battle Cry. And I read the book, and it reminded me so much of my brother. You know, I just couldn't believe it. So I made some tests. And next thing I know, I did like 7, 8, or 9 tests at Warner Brothers, and they still couldn't make up their mind. Then they went back to New York and tested Paul Newman and Jimmy Dean, and they still didn't know. And they came back and said, we'll give you one more test. And I thought I was terrible in it, and that was the one that got me the role. You know, so you never really know about those things. But I was thrilled, and that was because of that film, they exercised an option to possibly put me under contract. And with the success of that film, they did put me under contract.
And they never put you in a film in which you didn't have to take your shirt off. How did you feel about that?
I didn't battle cry in a couple of those. You know, you do what, you know, your job is to do what they ask you to do. And if you don't, you're out on your ear and they get someone else. And I was just a wide-eyed kid, you know, and I loved movies. You know, I used to go to movies all the time as a kid. Little did I ever realize I'd be in, you know.
Yeah. And of course, you were acting right alongside some of our, you know, legendary stars. I mentioned in our introduction, John Wayne or Gary Cooper. What about Gary Cooper? I think he's a great actor. How was it working with him?
Coop was one of the best people I ever worked with. I just loved him. In fact, I just talked to his daughter, Maria, the other day. We're very close friends, and she lives in New York, and she's quite amazing. You know, no, she's terrific. You know, but Coop, you know, there are three actors that really were outstanding in my mind, and I think of them all the time and pray for them all the time. And they're Gary Cooper, Van Heflin, and of course, you know, Fred Astaire.
Oh, Astaire, he was so great.
He was really, really great. And the women, I was very fortunate to work with some incredible people like Lana Turner and Rhea Hayworth, Sophia Loren. You know, Natalie was like my kid's sister. She was a delight. Just loved her.
Yeah, you write very interestingly in your book about having to take Linda Darnell in your arms. You just met her. You were like excited to meet a movie star, and you're having to kiss her. And what was that like?
Well, Linda was fabulous. She, you know, I was a nervous wreck, and I did a screen test with her for my very first film, which I was terrible in. It wasn't much of a film, but I was always a big fan of hers. In the scene, during the test scene, she leaned over and I gave her a kiss, and she pinched me. She says, "That was nice." She said, "Tab, you've got to relax. I'm good luck for newcomers." I never forgot that. She was great.
did you have to? I mean, I assume you know how to kiss people, but did you have to learn some kind of a stage kiss that you could make it look passionate without?
No, what you do, that would be phony.
Oh, so you just kiss?
You do what you feel.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what
your
important
character feels. Yeah.
You know, you've got this body that God gave you. Use it. You use it in every capacity, mentally, physically, and hopefully spiritually.
I guess that's something that Fred Astaire did so well. I think people don't think of Fred Astaire as being a great actor, but he really was.
You know, he was such a wonderful human being. And acting is being. I mean, he was an incredible actor. He was an incredible person, though.
Yeah,
and Van Heflin. I did a few films with Van. My gosh, when you work with people like that, it was It was quite extraordinary.
Well, I was watching your film Gunman's Walk recently. That's such a fine picture. And it's got kind of a surprising ending in that Van Heflin, who plays this rough, mean cowboy. You know, he breaks down and he cries. You don't see cowboys crying in the movies very often.
Well, it's a very interesting script. I do believe it's one of the best Westerns made. I mean, it was written by Frank Nugent, who wrote The Quiet Man.
Right.
I mean, he was a fabulous screenwriter, and he just really delivered with these great characters, and then it was our jobs as the actors to bring them alive, you know.
I love that picture. It's beautifully shot.
Yeah, Phil Carlson was one of my favorite directors. He doesn't get a lot of acclaim, but he was a marvelous director.
And the wide screen, it's like wider than wide.
And, you know, when you're shooting those films, you've got to draw people into what you're giving them, you know, what it must have been like at that time.
Oh, I wonder about that. Is it different, you know, because you excelled in both film and television, especially in those live TV dramas. Is it a different skill acting in a big wide cinema scope picture and being on small screen?
I do believe that acting is the same no matter what, but you have constrictions when you're doing live television. Hitting marks, you do in the motion pictures also, but you're more constrained in the days of live television. I always say it was the worst combination of doing a play and a motion picture rolled into one. For example, if you're doing a play, you could say, oh gosh, that was a terrible performance I gave tonight. Thank God there's tomorrow. And if you were in a film, you could stop and say, cut, could we please do that again? Because I just wasn't 100% there. But when you had live television, those two little red dots went on. You better be on your game.
There was no retake.
That was really tough.
When you did live TV, did you have to do it twice? You know, once for the West Coast and once for the East Coast? Or did they just...
No. They just did the show live. It was like a play, but, you know, it was very amazing. Those Playhouse 90s were brilliant days. I mean, doing shows with John Frankenheimer and those great directors, Sidney Lumet, you know, those are the best. Those are the best. And look at the people I was fortunate enough to work with. Geraldine Page, you know, they don't come any better than that.
Yeah, yeah. Do they still exist? Do all of your live television appearances still...
I have no idea. I know my friend Alan has copies of all the stuff I've done, but I never kept any of that stuff.
No? You were just happy to have it behind you, or what?
Well, I was thrilled to be doing all that, but my touch of reality in that what I call unrealistic world were my horses.
Yeah.
You know, I was happy as shoveling the real stuff out of the barn. I mean, I was out there this afternoon with my mayor.
Do you still ride?
The horses were a major part of my life. They still are.
Do you still ride, Tab Hunter?
I gave up riding a couple of years ago after I showed at Upperville, Virginia. That was my last show, and I just felt that my balance wasn't what it used to be. But, you know, I used to compete in a lot of the Grand Prix, and I was a judge with the American Horse Show Association, and I gave riding clinics. I was very involved, very heavily, and I've had horses that represented the United States in international competition.
Thoroughbreds, or what breed are you?
Well, mainly thoroughbreds, yes. They were show jumpers.
Yeah, some of those jumps you go over pretty high.
Well, in those days, yeah, we were in big competition, you know, and it was a great sport. I loved it. And I'm still involved with it by going and watching all of it.
What worries me whenever I see you in those pictures jumping is you're never wearing a helmet. Why don't you wear a helmet?
Well, nowadays they do. In those days, I used to wear, you know, in the early days, we didn't wear helmets at all. Then we started wearing caps, and then we wore helmets, and now they have the wonderful helmets that are used, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And you still, how many horses do you own?
Well, I have a wonderful mare that I bred quite some time ago. I call her Harlow. After Jean Harlow, because she has an old white mane. She's quite lovely, and she showed for a few years, and, you know, now she's just, I bred her, but and I have a two-year-old out of her that is quite spectacular. She's a Dutch warm-blood mare, and I bred her to a very fine thoroughbred stallion that is here in California, who was by the leading sire in California last year, And I have a 2-year-old that I just love called Skylark. And I think she's going to be a top show jumper. She's got the breeding for it.
And you will be the one to train her?
Well, I do a lot of starting work with her. Even now, she's, if I put her in the chute just a little bit without forcing her, without doing too much, and I lunge her a little bit and I start bidding her up a little bit. You know, all that work I've always enjoyed doing. It's a very important part of my life. And then as she gets older, I'll send her to my godchild who shows in the Grand Prix level of show jumping.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, of course, groundwork is almost as fun as riding.
Well, the groundwork or the ABCs are major. The dressage is the basis of it all.
Yeah.
Good dressage.
Yeah. It's funny that you called your book Tab Hunter Confidential, because Confidential magazine was such a thorn in your side.
Well, that's true. You know, I call it because it was such a rag, Confidential magazine. But I was going to call the book Product of Hollywood, because I was a product of Hollywood thrown into the business. You know, where do you serve your apprenticeship? And I'll never forget it when Julia Child was alive. I ran into her at the market one morning, and she was writing a book, and I was writing a book. And she said, Tab, come here. She said, how's your book coming along? I said, all right. How's yours? She said, fine, but I want to hear about yours. What are you going to call it? And I said, I think I'll call it Product of Hollywood. And she looked at me, and she said, that's not very sexy. I said, no, Julia, I'll give that some thought.
No, I thought that was a very clever title. And there's a film that's based on the book, pretty much based on the book, yes?
Well, we're going to, oddly enough, J.J. Abrams' company, who did Star Wars and all that, they're in touch with us. They want to make a feature film out of a portion of it.
Oh, with an actor playing you mean?
Yeah, oh yeah, I hope so.
Yeah,
but they want to do the portion about Tony Perkins and my mother and myself, and that portion of the film they think would be really interesting, so we have a meeting with them next week in L.A.
Oh, well, that sounds great.
And they've given us a few writers to think about that are very good, and I've read some of their work, so we've got to, you know, we'll see what happens.
Let's just talk briefly about Tony Perkins, who was a part of your life and a fabulous actor.
Yes, he was.
And I guess you guys had kind of a difficult relationship. I mean, you talked about how he kind of stole your role in that picture. I'm sorry, I just forgot.
Well, I don't like to look at it. It just happened that, you know, I wanted Warner Brothers to buy Fear Strikes Out,
which
I had done in
Jimmy Pearsall
television.
Story.
Jimmy Pearsall, you're right. And I'd wanted Warner Brothers to buy it. They didn't. And Tony got Paramount to buy it for him.
Were you mad?
Well, I was a little upset about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of, you know, funny the way it happened.
And then you were a pop singer, then he became a pop singer. He was copying you.
Really, I think people have to do their own thing, you know. There's different ways for people to get from A to B and B to C.
Yeah.
And I think the how is what's important.
Naturally, yeah. He wasn't a horseback rider.
Tony wasn't a big lover of the horses, that's for sure. But, you know, he was so funny. He says, I think I'll just ask for a method horse. I said, well, it's not that easy.
I do remember him in a couple of westerns, The Tin Star with Henry Fonda.
That's right. He was a fine actor.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSEO. My guest this week is Tab Hunter, who was not only a top movie star in the 1950s, but also a number one successful recording artist. Let's listen to his recording of Young Love, which was released by Dot Records. It first reached the Billboard charts on January 19th, 1957, and stayed at number one for a full 6 weeks, becoming a gold record. It was the success of this record that led Warner Brothers, where Tab Hunter was a contract player, to form Warner Brothers Records. Here it is, Tab Hunter singing Young Love.
They say for every boy and girl there's just one love in this whole world, and I know I found mine. The heavenly touch of your embrace tells me no one could take your place ever in my heart. Young love, first love, filled with truth. just one kiss from your sweet lips will tell me that your love is real, and I can feel that it's true. We will vow to one another there will never be another love for you.
That was my guest, Tab Hunter, singing his number one smash of 1957, Young Love. Tab made many more records in the years to come, and he starred in the movie version of the Broadway musical Damn Yankees. Tab Hunter, westerns like Gunman's Walk gave you an opportunity to show off your writing skill. Was it always you in the saddle?
Almost all of it, but a lot of the really, really tough stuff. You know, I had my friend Jack Connors, who was a great stuntman in Hollywood, and I used him in a lot of films. But, jumping across the gullies and all of that stuff. I mean, Jack was an incredible stuntman.
Yeah. Well, must have looked like you, because it's hard to
tell. Not at all. No, not at all. No, Jack was just a great old salt. He was an old cowboy, and he was tough as nails. And he and his wife were great friends of mine, lived just practically around the corner from me.
That picture also is unusual because, you know, you're sort of a nice guy, I think. You seem like a very nice fellow. And you're not very nice in that movie. You're a racist, mean, cold-blooded killer.
Well, you know, those are the most interesting characters to play, characters that you have to build and find out why they are like this and what makes them like that. And I think that's the real wonderful part of acting.
And you even get a chance to sing in that picture.
Well, that's right, I did. Yeah, I forgot about that.
There's a theme song, and you sing it. You're drunk, and you are kissing a bunch of women, and you're singing.
I'll never forget. I was on loan out from Warner Brothers, but Harry Cohn wanted to meet me over at Columbia, and I thought, oh my God. You know, his reputation, I'm scared to death to go and meet him.
Yeah.
So I walked up to, I went to Columbia and went through the double doors and walked down the hall and went through another double doors and walked down the hall and went through another set of double doors. There he was at a great big desk in his office getting a haircut. And he looked up and he said, oh, so you're Tab Hunter. And I said, yes, sir. He said, Bob Wagner wants to do this role. And I said, well, then I think you should get Bob Wagner. And I turned and started to leave. And he said, come back here. He said, what'd you think of the script? Did you like it? I said, sir, I didn't like it. I loved it. He said, sit down. I sat down. I had a meeting with him for 30 minutes, and I got the role. And it's the only time I ever met him. And everybody had bad things to say about him. I can only say he was incredible. And, you know, I said, I want to use my own horse in the film. He let me do that. And he was just terrific. And, we got to find the positive in this day and age.
Yeah, well, that's... And was there a gigantic desk between you, like there is?
Oh, definitely. Well, he had quite a reputation. I never read the book, King Cone,
yeah,
but
King
I hear
Cone.
It was quite something.
Yeah, yeah. I want to ask you about Damn Yankees. I love Damn Yankees.
I'm glad to hear that, because I did, too. I loved the show, and I loved being part of it, and I was thrilled when Jack Warner bought it for me.
That's a very difficult role, and you do it so well because you're playing an old man.
Well, you know, you're not really. You're playing him younger when he sells his soul to the devil for, you know.
But you're still him. You're still in love with your wife and.
Oh,
so
of course. How could you not be?
Yeah, that's a subtlety that's in the role. I think is so great.
Well, it's a wonderful role, you know. My gosh, and Shannon Bolan was the best. She just passed away. She was a fabulous woman.
She was great. And of course, Gwen Verdon.
Well, Gwen was Gwen. I mean, she was on... I remember the first time I ever saw her, she was one of the Jack Cole dancers at Ciro's. I think I was just, 16 or 17 years old.
Really?
I saw her there in the, She was a fabulous dancer.
And here she is doing a striptease.
She and Bobby Fosse were, what a great team.
Yeah, right. Who's got the pain in the mambo?
That's right.
But she's like stripping in front of you, and you're like,
well,
she's,
you know,
throwing herself at
you. You know, she had sold her soul to the devil, you know, yeah, as people often do, unfortunately. No, she was terrific. It's a lovely piece of work, that show. Damn Yankees is a really interesting, you know, lovely show. I enjoyed doing that with the whole New York cast.
And you got to sing in that picture as well.
Yeah, I got to sing and tried to dance a couple steps. I told Bobby Fosse, I said, Bobby, I've got two left feet. He said, Dab, don't worry about it.
Was there some kind of trick to make it look like you were dancing well?
No. I just did what he asked me to do. You know, tried to do it the best of my ability.
You sang very well in the picture, did they?
Well, thank you very much.
Did you do your singing in a recording studio? Did you sing it live?
It was
on the
very
set?
Difficult because there was a musician strike at the time.
Oh.
And where all the actors could sing to their recording that they made when they were on Broadway, I had to sing it a cappella without one bit of musical accompaniment, and it was really, really tough to do. Then they sent the film to London to be scored.
Wow.
So that's not the way to do a musical.
And so how did you even know if you were hitting the notes or whatever?
Well, I tried. I mean, hopefully the pitch was all right.
And though your jaw has to go, he may come back to you again. So sleep your sleep, old girl. Our love will keep, old girl, till then. Goodbye, old girl, my old girl, goodbye.
Yeah,
that sounds
good.
I worked very hard at that. I had a wonderful coach I used to work with in New York who worked with just about everybody on Broadway. You know, Larry Kurt, Cheetah Rivera, Gwen, you know, Herschel Bernardi, you know, I mean, everybody on Broadway, Lord Bacall, they all worked for Keith Davis, who was brilliant.
Well, you just mentioned Larry Kurt, so that makes me think of West Side Story, which is a picture you could have done, should have done. I did do it
in the theater many years later.
Oh, did you? Uh-huh.
Oh, I did it a number of times, yes. I did it just outside of New York in Meadowbrook.
You know, I think, you know, one of the reasons I love Damn Yankees, and maybe you disagree, but I think that I love musicals, and I love Broadway musicals, but I think most Broadway musicals have not been turned into very great movies. Damn Yankees is one of the exceptions. And I think, although West Side Story is a very popular movie, and it's a lovely movie, it could have been incredible.
I thought it turned out to be a really good movie. I mean, the play was brilliant, but I thought the movie was very, very well done. I really enjoyed that. When I see a lot of musicals, I totally agree with you. They don't always capture what they could. Hollywood has to put his little gloss on it, and in doing that, they lose that wonderful sense of reality.
Oh, I love Natalie Wood, but if they had...
Well, she was great.
She's great, but if they had cast a Latina actress who could actually sing the part, that would have been also great. And I think if they'd cast you instead of Richard Beamer, I think that would have also been great.
Well, I didn't think Beamer was too good in it. You know, it just wasn't the right vehicle for him.
And he doesn't do his own singing. You could have done the singing.
Well, I don't. You don't know what Hollywood. You know, I mean, a lot of people sing. A lot of people. A lot of times, the bosses upstairs decide what they want.
Yeah.
And you know, you're working for them. You just do the best you possibly can.
And I know that eventually was a conflict for you working, you know, having to do what the studio wanted you to do. But other than when you finally turned your back on the studio, was it a bad thing doing what the studio asked? Or
no, not at all. Not at all. If you don't do it, someone else will, so they'll kick you out. I loved being under contract to the studio, but it was the end of the studio system.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize. So the studios were in a total state of not knowing which direction to go in filmmaking. People wanted real people in real situations, and the influx of, you know, Broadway actors and, you know, lovely film from Europe. It was a terribly difficult time for Hollywood. Studios were falling apart. Television was coming in a big way.
And you did some great television and also some not so great television.
Well, that's very true. You know, in the day, I think I did miss the live television shows like the Playhouse 90s and Climax and Studio Ones and all those great shows. I mean, some wonderful movies were made because of those teleplays.
Sure, Requiem for a Heavyweight and Patterns and
exactly.
Yeah. Marty and
Twelve Angry Men. A number of them.
Yeah, those are all great films. The Miracle Worker, in fact, is one of those.
That's true.
So then you kind of took a break from acting. What were you working a lot with horses then? Were you?
No, I didn't take a break from it. I just, you know, Hollywood, when they turn their back on you, it turns its back on you, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and some people just, you have to handle what's happening. It ran its course. You know, I mean, how many guest shots on television shows can you do? Or The Love Boat or, you know, stuff like that, which is la-la TV.
Yeah.
You know, it's not very exciting. I mean, you do it because it's called survival, and you have to pay the bills.
Yeah, well, so did you ever think about, at that time, doing a television series, like your co-star, James Darren?
Well, I did do a series, but it was very, after I left Warner Brothers, I had my own series on Sunday night, opposite the Ed Sullivan Show.
Perfect time slot.
That was a disaster because, I mean, Sullivan was an institution on Sunday night.
Yeah, yeah.
And our show wasn't. It started out to be a really good show. The idea was brilliant. It was Stanley Shapiro. But we lost Stanley, and that was the first big error.
Yeah, yeah. And it didn't. Your series did not last very
long. Well, we did 36, which they don't do anymore.
Wow.
I mean,
really?
That was a whole season.
Yeah. I didn't realize you did that many of them.
Oh, yeah. But I just as soon forget all of them, except the pilot. The pilot was quite good.
The Tab Hunter Show. Starring Tab Hunter. Richard Erdman and Jerome Cowan. Brought to you by West Clocks, world's largest manufacturer of timepieces. For the newest ideas in time, depend on West Clocks.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO. We're talking this week with Tab Hunter. He was the star of many great films, including Damn Yankees. Here he is singing in that film with Gwen Verdon.
Or brother.
Ain't it just great? Ain't it just grand? We've got each other.
Two lost ships on a stormy sea. One with no sail and one with no rudder. We've got each other.
Two lost sheep in the wilds of the hills, far from the author, Jacks and Jills. We wandered away and went astray, but we ain't fussing 'cause we've got us and we're two lost souls. Ain't it just great? Ain't it just grand?
We've got each other. You've got me, and I've got you. We've got a lot, because we've got each other.
Movie star Tab Hunter and Broadway star Gwen Verdon from the film Damn Yankees. And we're talking with Tab Hunter today on From the Bookshelf. Tab Hunter, in addition to your skills as a horseman, you are also a highly skilled ice skater. How did you get involved with that?
Ice skater, a friend of mine, Terry Barcella, said, let's go to the rink and skate. So I went and I enjoyed it. So I got into skating and took it up competitively. But, you know, I gave it up after a while. I was in singles and in pairs. But it's only your own accomplishment. And so I went back to the horses, which were a major part of my life, because you're working with an animal that has a life of its own, and that's a whole different ballgame.
So the connection with the horses was stronger for you?
Oh, much stronger.
Yeah, interesting. And it's the fact that you have a partner.
Exactly, exactly. You know, relating to that animal is very important.
Yeah, in that documentary, Tab Hunter Confidential, that was made a couple of years ago, Clint Eastwood, of course, spent a lot of time on horses, co-starred with you in a picture, said something about horses having the brain the size of a walnut. And people are always...
I got a big kick out of that.
People are always complaining about, you know, horses not being smart. But I think they're pretty intuitive and...
They're creatures of a habit.
Mm-hmm.
So make it a good experience.
Yeah. Yeah. You do seminars, or you would do training sessions with people?
I used to. Well, I've worked with, you know, I've known some of the top riders and trainers in the world.
Yeah.
And I've had horses. I sold a horse that went to the Olympic Games. It was on the Mexican team. I had a horse that won the Cleveland Grand Prix. I had the horse that put Robert Redland, who's the chef to keep for the United States Equestrian Team. I had that horse for a while. And I've been very fortunate. I've had some very fine horses in my life.
In horse training, there's sometimes these, you know, kind of fad styles of training that come and go, and there's Monty Roberts, for instance. Did you ever work with him? Did you know him?
I know Monty. I knew he was under contract to Warner Brothers one time. Monty has a very good way, you know. In fact, his farm is just about three farms from where I have my baby in the valley.
And are you a fan of his style? Or?
Well, I think that works. You know, it works. Everyone has, a lot of people have different ways of working horses. Monty's is very proven and works very well.
But it's not yours.
Well, to a degree, yes, and to a degree, no. Every horse is individual, and I try to use the same basis for each one. And it's very slow and very relaxing. So there's never tension, and you try to eliminate tensions. And Monty does that, too.
Mm-hmm.
He has a different way of doing it.
Well, now there's this whole, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but this whole movement in horsemanship of... No negative reinforcement, all positive.
Well, I think that's a very good way to be, you know. I mean, if anyone says a horse isn't sensitive, all you have to do is see what a fly lands on their skin, how they react.
Yeah.
They're very sensitive animals. And they're creatures of habit, repetition, so make it a good experience. But the ABCs are very, very important.
By that you mean...
Well, whether it be just without trying to force them into anything, the ABCs of things make it a good experience for them, so they're pleased in it. And once you get to working them on the flat where you're riding them and all, I'm a great lover of cavalletti, gymnastic work, the good dressage work. It's ABC, it's everything. It's everything. And when you get up to the level of World Cup, you get to see the top horses and riders in the world and the way they work their horses.
How do you when you're approaching a gigantic jump the way you do or have?
Well, I don't do it anymore.
No.
But,
How do you get your horse to go over a gigantic jump like that?
Well, you don't just jump a big jump. You start with the ABCs. You start with gymnastics and things like that. And you, a lot of people they overwork their horses. You got to keep them fresh and looking forward to it and happy.
Well, when you say overwork, you would still work your horse every day, but not necessarily jump them every day, or
never jump them every day. I just one day flat work, one day working in the hills, taking them out in the country, one day doing gymnastics, one day little courses, offenses, just different things to keep them happy and refreshed and looking forward to it.
Let's talk a little bit about dogs, because I know you're a dog lover also.
Well, I had to put my old dog down not too long ago. It was very difficult, but I still have Hattie, and she's lying right here next to me.
That's that's the whole worst part of dog ownership. How come we can send a man to the moon, but we can't have a dog live, say 50 years? I think I would be happy with that.
Well, that's the cycle. Everything is in a cycle, isn't it? I mean, horses have their cycle that they're in. We have ours. Animals have theirs.
But the dog, I want them to, you invest all this energy in your dog, and they're just perfect, and then they start to go, and you got to say goodbye. It's hard to say goodbye, isn't it?
It is hard to say goodbye, but, you got to look at the positive.
So Whippets is your preferred breed these days.
That's it. I had every dog in the world, but about 50 years ago, I was at a horse show, and my friend Cynthia said, "Oh, Tab, we've got to find a home for this Whippet." And I said, "Oh my God!" She said, "Would you consider her?" Because I didn't have a dog at that time. So I said, "Yeah, I'll take her to the motel." So I was staying at the Indio Horse Show, and we were down in the desert. And I said, "What's her name?" She said, "Well, Coventry Saucy Countess." I said, "Well, she looks like a drowned rat, skinny little black thing." So I said, "Come on, rat," and I took her to the motel, and she slept with her head on the pillow next to me, and then the next morning, Cynthia said, "Do you want her?" I said, "Try to take her back." She was perfect. And I had Rat until she passed away, until she died, and I bred her, got a lot of friends of mine interested in Whippets, and I've had Whippets ever since.
Well, that's 50 years of Whippets.
Well, they're not obnoxious, they're not yappy dogs, they're well-behaved. They're like children should be.
That's right.
The way children were brought up.
Yeah, not the way kids are nowadays, though.
Well, that's very true. It's a pleasure when you see them that are well-mannered.
Something you wrote about in your book that I think was so interesting is that, people often wonder, why do movie stars all live together in Beverly Hills or whatever? And you kind of had an experience that, and dogs were involved, that really makes it clear that you kind of have to, if you're in the public eye, you really have to isolate yourself.
Well, I was never comfortable in that skin. The important thing was the work, and I felt, my life with the horses, with my animals, is where I could breathe fresh air.
Yeah. So.
So the other stuff, you went along with because it's your job, and you do it to the best of your ability. You get the hell out. But I loved working as an actor. But I now look back at it and think of it as my past life.
You never tempted to go do some television or a movie these days?
No.
No.
I was having dinner with Carol Burnett last night, and her husband. And we were having dinner. She said, "Tab," and I said, "Congratulations, Carol! I hear your new series is fabulous." And she said, "I'd love you to play one of my husbands." She's got eight husbands in the series she was talking about. And I said, "Oh, that would be great fun." She said, "Would you do it?" And I said, "I don't know, Carol. Talk to me about it when the script is there." But I for her, I'd do anything because she's so great.
So for the right part might tempt you out.
I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Tab Hunter, I want to thank you for all of the performances that you have given us, and the records, the songs are all great, and we treasure them all. And thanks so much for talking to me on From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you for asking me to join you. I really appreciate that. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate that.
Well, Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Tab Hunter. He's the author of a book called Tab Hunter Confidential. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. We'll see you next time.